You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hello, Cosmic Pizza Podcast, the show of all sorts that sorts all by serving up a slice of life. What is your order, please? I see. The special it is. We will be there to deliver ASAP. Pizza Podcast Special Delivery. Hello and welcome to episode 34 of the that's because I went off script.
Yeah, because we don't usually say the episode.
Don't usually say the episode. Yeah, I thought I'll put that in. Oh no, it doesn't fit in when you read that. Hello and welcome to your special delivery of the Cosmic Pizza Podcast. I'm Paul from the UK, and today with me is
Dan in the UK
and Sean in Canada.
And welcome to episode 34, where we will serve you a delicious slice of life. And this this week, it is film night again.
Yay!
Yay! Anyway, sorry.
Get the popcorn out.
Get the VCR ready.
Get your Kiora. I don't know. Right, so we are doing this week our top films from the 1970s. Okay, so normally in our film of the decade episodes, we look at the most notable films and then each pick our top three films from that decade. However, there are so many good films to talk about from the 1970s, and the recording went on for quite a while, that we've decided to split this episode into two parts. In this episode, we'll just talk about the films from the 1970s. And in part two, in 2 weeks' time...
Excuse me?
2 weeks!
We will reveal our top three films from 1970 to 1979. We had feedback.
People listen to the show? What?
I was accosted in a pub.
What? For real?
You seem to be all right. You seem to be in one piece. What's going on?
Yeah. Oh, I was lucky to get out alive.
Oh, God.
Tell me more.
So you've heard me talking about my friend Paul Schofield, who's sent in a few bits and pieces now and again, a bit of feedback here and there. Long-time friend of mine. We went out for a meal with our respective wives, and his wife, Amanda, accosted me and said, "I've got a bone to pick with you." Oh, right. She says, in your podcast, and this is from the films from the 1950s, she said, "You said," and I'm going to play the clip here, Harvey with James Stewart. Again, it's supposed to be a classic, you know, this big rabbit. And she said, "What do you mean? It is a classic. It's an absolute classic." She just went off on one. And I thought, okay, I sort of misspoke there. I obviously said what I meant to say was, of course, it's a classic. It is a classic. But I just used the wrong words. I couldn't argue against her. I said, "Well, it's a classic in your mind." She said, "No, it is a classic. Everybody thinks it's a classic." Thought, yeah, okay. Fine, it's a classic.
Which film was this?
Harvey with James Stewart. It's the one with the big white rabbit. He can see the rabbit, but nobody else can.
But no one else can. All right.
So, yeah, it's such a classic. Even Sean hasn't heard of it.
Nope. And we even did an episode about it, and I still don't remember.
Yes.
Don't say it's not a classic anymore. We're going to spark a riot or something. Just calm down, guys.
Yes. The second bit of feedback was actually on our webpage.
Yes, it was. I did
Facebook,
see that.
Facebook page.
Yes.
From our good friend Bill.
Mm-hmm.
There was, yes, that's right. Now, I'm not going to read it out because it's a bit long. And
this is going to be a long enough episode already.
It's going to be a long enough episode, yeah. But he brought up some great points. We did reply to him on the Facebook page. We also got some feedback from my sister.
Yes, I seem to remember reading this one, yes.
So my sister wrote, halfway through and you've given me a couple of laugh out loud moments. Dan's, I'm Spartacus and so's my wife. Also, my brother's impression of the character from the Magnificent Men in their flying machines film is hilarious. She also went on to say, films from the 1960s includes The Italian Job, which I'd totally forgot about.
Yeah.
Which is her favourite film, and she because she loves minis, and she's had quite a few minis in her lifetime. So, she mentioned that one, which I don't know why I didn't put it in. It must have not been on that list I was looking at.
Yeah. I think we'll have to have your sister on for our classic car episode.
Yes. Yes.
There you go.
Which I just decided we need to have one of right now.
No. Well, we've been planning it for months. What are you talking about?
Cars that we have.
That's
owned.
What I meant.
Yes. We're that professional. We're that far ahead.
Mm-hmm. Now, you two guys seem to think this was going to be quite hard for you because you weren't really sort of into the 70s, but this is more my era, as I found out when I started looking through the list. So what do you reckon of the films from the 70s, Sean? What's your feeling about them?
There's a lot of good films from the 70s. A lot of good things were produced in the 70s, namely me in 1976. But a lot of good films, a lot of bad films, a lot of big named films. The 70s was huge. This wasn't as difficult for me as the 80s are going to be. But, it was somewhat difficult to narrow it down to my top three. There was so many I could have put on the list.
Yeah, I think the 70s was a turning point in films. I mean, when you see what had come in the 60s and then what happened in the 70s, and then after the 70s, everything was different. You know, a lot of the big sci-fi films came out, a lot of action films came out, and a couple of cop films came out that changed the way cops were filmed, and there's disaster movies that you know, changed things. So, yeah, I think the 70s was quite a big decade. What about you, Dan?
Well, I wasn't around in the 70s. I come the next decade. So our next episode, that's me. But the movies from the 70s were formative because they were still around. They were still pop culture touchstones. There were so many movies on the list as I was going through all the 70s that was like, oh, yeah, that, you know, that kind of influences that movie when I was a kid and that movie after that. You can see the throughput of everything that comes out in the 70s influences everything you see in the 80s. And there is that shift, like you say, a turning point in cinema where you move from the fairly staged and staid, almost stage actors way of portraying characters that we saw in the 50s and 60s. And it moves into movies having their own acting craft, the way they're portrayed, the way that the actors approach the characters and the way they display them. They're so much more aware that there's a camera on them. It's not an audience that they're performing to. There's a big difference in how these movies are put together. And I think that's probably why they stay with us a bit longer than, say, the older films. Now, that may just be because we're biased and we're, you know, born or we're formative around these movies, but there is a big change in how these movies are being made. And it seems to be taken more seriously, I guess.
So what we've got here is, or what I've got here is, a list of
notable
films. notable films. Yeah, I mean, it's not even a full list of notable films. There are so many I'm going to miss out.
Oh, big time.
Because it's just it would just be too many to mention. But
it's true.
A lot here. And I'm going to go through them very, very quickly. And we'll go through it. So we'll go through it in genres. So if any of you guys want to, you know, jump in at the end of the list and say what you think about a certain film, just please do.
And I think we agreed when we did our top three that we were going to stay away from Star Wars and Star Trek and Jaws and Close Encounters, because those are the big ones.
Of course,
it's just typical that those are awesome and we love them. So we left those off our list.
Exactly. They're, yeah. they're more sort of personal films, really, than you know what we remember growing up and what we loved growing up, and not you know because yes, it would just be the top three big films of that time. So we'll start with the cops and crime movies. So and obviously, as I'm going through this list, some of these will be they'll be noticeable by their absence, and there's probably a reason for that. It may be in one of our lists. So, but anyway, we'll go with it. So we start with Magnum Force, which is of course Clint Eastwood, and also David Soul, The Enforcer, and with Clint Eastwood and Tyne Daly. These obviously being sequels and or, follow-ons from the original film. Shaft, Richard Roundtree, I think is a classic film. Serpico with Al Pacino. Two films which I was almost I was going to put them into an honourable mention, but then I've got I think I'm going to drop all my honourable mentions and just talk about them when they come up because there's too many of them. The French Connection and French Connection 2, which I think are fabulous films. Gene Hackman is brilliant in it, and it's really really clever the way that and they've put an American into France and put him out of a fish out of water, so to speak. So, yeah, it's pretty good. Clockwork Orange, which I've never seen, Death Wish, which I have seen many years ago, mm-hmm. and The Sting with Paul Newman. So, any of those grab you?
Yeah, Clockwork Orange is a really difficult film to watch. I have it in my Stanley Kubrick retrospective Blu-ray box set, and I don't think I've watched it on disc, but I remember it was on TV late at night one time, and it just kept going. I had to turn it off because I couldn't stay up that late, and it was super disturbing. Great acting, of course. It's got Dr. Tolian Soran in it, who we know as Dr. Julian Bashir's real life uncle and the main villain in Star Trek Generations, but he's famous for more than that. Malcolm McDowell.
Yeah, he's in one of my favorite films from the 80s, which we'll probably come on to at some point, which is Blue Thunder, and he plays the bad guy in that. Absolutely love him, and he's a cracking actor. So anyway, so moving on to the next genre of films is superhero films. Now, there will be a noticeable missing one, but there were three other superhero films in the 70s. Can you name three? There's probably more, but can you name three of them?
Nope. I can name one that you're not going to mention, but I can't name the other three.
Was there one called Condor Man by any chance? It was some mothers do have him himself. Was Condor Man. He was like an accident-prone superhero who I think was in France for most of the film, if I can remember right. It's been a while since I've seen it. But I think it's actually Disney property, so I don't know why it's not on Disney Plus. But all I remember is the really cheesy Condor Man intro music.
Oh, is that the one where he had the truck but there was a car underneath? Mm.
Yes, I seem to remember that. Yes, yeah.
Yes, it was a really old rickety truck, but if he needed to escape, he would jettison that part of it, and he'd have a sports car underneath or something.
Yes, and then I think the end of the movie is just like it goes from him being real life to being an animated version of himself. It's actually hand-drawn over real like plates of pictures of the city and things like that. And he's just swooping around, and then I guess the budget ran out, and they just had to draw in the actor because they couldn't afford him anymore. I don't know, but it's a really weird film.
I have vague recollections, but I don't think I've seen it in like 30 years or more.
Anyway, yeah, that's my input. There you go.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's good. Yeah. Okay, so I've got three. One is Spider-Man. The other is Spider-Man 2. And the third one is The Avengers.
Really?
Have you seen The Avengers? Go onto YouTube, type in The Avengers 1978 and have a look. It is hilarious. Now, it's got the actual Hulk from the 1970s, Lou Ferrigno as the Hulk. There is a Thor. He's just basically dressed in a bearskin sort of thing and with a helmet with wings and a hammer. Just some bloke, not even muscles on him. You know, he's no Chris Hemsworth. And then, Iron Man. The top of Iron Man looks like Robbie the Robot.
Oh, no.
The helmet is cone-shaped and goes, and he can't turn his head. He comes down onto his shoulders. So he's like, and he, for some reason, it inflates. I don't know why it inflates, but he has to get into this cube, into this bed, and the lid comes down on the bed, and it puts the suit on him, obviously, which takes far too long. Comes back up again, and then he goes, and it inflates, and then he's walking around. Oh man, it's horrible. And Captain America is just some bloke in. It looks like a kid's dress up thing with the inflatable muscles. It's like, and he's doing all of the. If you remember the Bionic Man, the sort of noise that he would make as he would jump, and it sort of makes that sort of noise as he jumps onto high places and riding a bike, a motorbike that's like, oh, it looks plastic. It's horrible. It's horrible. I only found that because I was looking at the Spider-Man stuff before, and I showed my son. And
I remember the Spider-Man one. That was a big deal. Being a kid, seeing like the man crawling up the side of the building, even though it's clearly just one image posted onto the other. It's fantastic.
It's not. Well, a lot of it isn't, because a lot of it is. The problem is they filmed it in Los Angeles, because there's no high-rise buildings in Los Angeles. So that's why the second one was based in China, where they've got a lot more. It was at Hong Kong, I beg your pardon. Nicholas Hammond, who was actually one of the young boy from The Sound of Music, grown up, and he played Spider-Man. He was okay. He was good. He was a good Peter Parker. Horrible Spider-Man, because he's like too camp and he jumps off things, and you know the way he lands, and he's all like ready for action, and he's got these massive bracelets on him, which is obviously the web slinging thing, and when he fires the button, string comes out, you know, it's like it's rope. They obviously, there's a guy in the side of the camera, and when he squirts the thing, he just throws this rope web at people, and they get all tangled up in it. It's hilarious. Again, my son was watching. We used to have this on VHS. My son was watching it, and he said, "Oh, I remember you playing this when we were kids, because you know, it was Spider-Man, and it was the only thing we had at the time. We didn't have Tobey Maguire and all that type of thing." It's funny. But the second one, Spider-Man 2, the Chinese Web, filmed in Hong Kong in 1970. It was filmed in 78. It was shown in 1979. I was actually in Hong Kong at that time, so on holiday, as it turned out. But we lived in Singapore for a couple of years, and it coincided with those films being made. And all of the location shots in Hong Kong are exactly when I was on holiday there. So it's almost like a home movie when we watch it. All of the scenes are the same. They've got the restaurant that he fights on. There's a floating restaurant, which is still there today. It's a floating restaurant. It's an old boat, which they've converted into a multi-story restaurant. It's called the Jumbo Floating Restaurant. And they have a fight on there, and we actually had a meal inside that. It must have been around the time they were filming it. It must have been close. So a lot of good memories from that film through my kids, and also through from me being there. So those are the three superhero films that came out of that time.
I haven't seen them.
Oh, go online. It's great. I mean, they got some footage of him climbing up the wall and all that, but he's moving too quickly, so his hands are sliding all over the wall. It looks, and it's, but although he's obviously being pulled up by a rope, you can't see the rope. It's very, and they haven't wiped it out, so it must be a very thin wire that they've put this guy on. So
I always mix up. There's one little memory I have of a Kenny Everett sketch that was based on that movie, where Spider-Man is running up the side of the building so fast, and he's just holding his crotch the whole time. He's running. What's he doing? Where's he going? Spider-Man, where's he going? He finally gets in through a window. It's a men's bathroom. He finally gets to the stall, and he stops. And he just waddles away, and he's sort of shaking some wetness out of his leg, because he's clearly wet himself, and he couldn't open up the suit fast enough, and he just needed to go to the toilet.
He's searching around, isn't he, looking for the zip?
Trying to find the zip, and he can't do it.
I can't.
It's just too late. And it was purely based on from that movie that he did that sketch. So it's absolutely one of my favourites.
So we move on to disaster movies. Disaster movies were big in the 70s. They started with Airport. Then went to Airport 1975, Airport 77, which had some big names in it. Jack Lemmon, Christopher Lee, Olivia de Havilland, and James Stewart. Then there was Earthquake with Charlton Heston, The Poseidon Adventure with Shirley MacLaine, Towering Inferno with Paul Newman, Steve McQueen, and a load of other big names as well.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, the decade of the disaster movies.
Yeah. There's so many that I wanted to put on the list, but, you know, there's so many. Which one do you choose? Poseidon Adventure, I think, is probably the one that stands out for me, but I don't own it on DVD, and that was one of the criteria I used in my list to try and whittle it down, because it was just so hard.
And, of course, later on in our next episode that we do films with. Of course, all the airport movies spawned the parody of Airplane, which is phenomenal.
It's so good.
But we'll get onto that next time around. Also a big year for science fiction as well. We have, again, the order is all over the place, so it's not chronological in that sense. So Star Wars, obviously the big one. Close Encounters, huge. Book Rogers in the 25th Century. Okay. Battlestar Galactica, the original, I remember going to see, again, this came out when I was living abroad, and me and I think we went, we may have gone as a family to see it. And I remember reading the poster, and it says, a disaster befalls a planet and they go in search of Earth. Oh, okay, fine. So you watch the film, and the whole film is about the disaster. And right at the very end, almost the very last words they say is, "Let's go and find Earth." Well, but it said that in the poster. I mean, spoilers. I mean, it gave away the whole plot. I mean, the whole thing. I thought, well, you see, they will go and find Earth. And, you know, they look for Earth. Great, that will be the thing. They'll be searching for Earth. No, of course, this was really just a clever way of making a pilot. And then the series comes along, and then you watch the series. And I did like Battlestar, the TV series. I thought it was really good. But at that age, you know, when you're young like that, it's, I mean, if you watch it now, you can pick holes in it everywhere. But it holds good memories for me. I love science fiction, especially at that time. Mm. Then we have Death Race 2000, which I've never seen.
Oh, you should.
Do you reckon Stallone and David Carradine?
Yeah, it's totally ridiculous.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's, isn't there like Tornado Alley or something too, similar to that? And they're in a big machine with huge wheels, and it's post-apocalyptic, and I might be getting my disaster films mixed up, but there was a bunch of crazy ones from that time.
Yeah, post-apocalyptic films I do not like. It's not a genre I go for, really. Demon Seed. I don't know if you've ever seen Demon Seed.
Is that the Cronenberg film? Is that where there's the robot or the intelligent AI house that tries to have its baby with the lady inside? Yes,
I may have seen that.
I remember seeing it. Yeah,
the only bit I can remember, because obviously I was at that age when I saw it, was the scene where he impregnates her, or the robot impregnates her, and that was weird to watch.
Terrifying.
And then the baby at the end is terrifying. Yeah. I don't know why I saw that one. I don't know why I watched it, but then we have, because obviously this is the 1970s, Escape from the Planet of the Apes, which is of course the sequel.
Of course.
The Land That Time Forgot, Doug McClure. Mm. You may know him from other films like The Land That Time Forgot. Mad Max came out this year, of course, made Mel Gibson a big star.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Rollerball with James Caan. I always got the feeling he looked too old to be playing that sort of thing, but anyway. Of course, the big one, Star Trek The Motion Picture.
Yep.
We've obviously spoken about that many times. Escape to Witch Mountain with Don Pleasance. I don't know if you've seen that. I saw that as a kid. I thought it was a weird film.
Very weird.
And THX 1138.
I've had it on my list for like 20 years, but I've not seen it.
Yep, I've not seen it. I was surprised to find it had Robert Duvall as the star, but there you go. Also 1970s, that's the end of the science fiction stuff. Also in the 1970s, war movies were a big thing as well. Big stars in war movies.
Mm. War movies, you say? Mm. Never heard of them.
Yeah.
Mm. Crazy.
And I just, on my list here, spelt The Deer Hunter as The Deer Hunter. Wrong deer. So The Deer Hunter, Robert De Niro and others. One of those weird, strange war films that it becomes a classic somehow. And people like to watch it. It's just weird. I think the Russian roulette scenes are very disturbing. But anyway, Apocalypse Now. Seems to be a theme here. Vietnam taking center stage. This is a great film up until the end when it gets really strangely weird.
Yeah.
A Bridge Too Far, which I think was one of the first war movies I ever saw. That's got a huge cast. You know, James Caan, Sean Connery, Gene Hackman, Anthony Hopkins, Ryan O'Neill, Robert Redford. Huge, huge cast. The Eagle Has Landed, Donald Sutherland and Michael Caine. Donald Sutherland making an appearance a couple of times in this list. As we go to The Forest Town from Navarone, which is a good film.
That is a good film.
Edward Fox, Robert Shaw and Harrison Ford. Kelly's Heroes, Clint Eastwood. And, of course, Donald Sutherland in there as well. Wild Geese, which is Richard Burton, Roger Moore and Richard Harris. Patton, which is George C. Scott's version of the
Very good.
General. Yep. And Tora, Tora, Tora.
Well, there's a whole pile of films that I haven't seen.
Well, there you go. You need to get down to your local DVD rental store.
Yeah, if we had one.
Your local one is here.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm starting to think, like, am I like remembering all these movies nostalgically, or was I just a hostage to my dad's whims on the TV that I just never got to see anything else but war films? Because that is basically my childhood.
It was probably both.
It is
probably both. It is come together.
It's my childhood, but my childhood being like 10 years past a childhood. Really, it's more my teens when I sort of saw all these films. So. But I used to love war movies. I used to love playing war. When we were kids, we had a couple of friends, we used to go onto our local building site where all the houses were being built, and there'd be sand, big mounds of sand, and that, of course, would be a great bunker, and you could dive into it, and, shooting your wooden guns that we make. And I sound really old now. But anyway, let's move on.
So I think before you get to the next genre, why don't we play the Dr. Geek COVID vaccination promo?
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Welcome to Dr. Geek's Laboratory.
Dr. Geek here with another reminder that the ESO Network is pro-science and pro-vaccine. We urge you to be a superhero and protect yourself, your family, and your fellow geeks around the world. Don't be fooled by the forces of evil and their anti-science misinformation campaign. Consult the latest CDC guidelines, your doctor, and get the COVID vaccine today.
Hi everyone, it's Nathan, host of the 42cast. Our second season is just underway, and it's never been a better time to check in on what we're doing. Whether it's talking about the latest movies from the MCU, watching the Arrowverse shows, talking about classics such as Star Trek and Doctor Who, playing 8-bit video games, or sharing celebrity interviews, the 42cast has something for everyone. So give it a listen, and discover why it's the ultimate answer to fandom, geekiness, and everything. The 42cast is a proud member of the ESO Network.
Okay, let's move on in this long list. Thrillers. All the President's Men, Dustin Hoffman and Robert Redford. Day of the Jackal, Edward Fox. Marathon Man, which I've never seen. Dustin Hoffman, Laurence Olivier and Roy Scheider, which I didn't realize he was in there. Play Misty for Me, Clint Eastwood and Jessica Walker. Walter, I beg your pardon. Jessica Walter. Who sadly passed away
Earlier this year.
Ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There are more thrillers than that, but I haven't written them down because there's too many of them.
Yeah.
Action adventure movies.
Oh, that's one of my favorites if it's not sci-fi.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Let's see if I've seen any of them.
Well, that's right. Yeah. Not only that, there's probably loads that you're going to add to this list and I haven't written down. Assault on Precinct 13,
mm-hmm.
which I have seen.
I've seen the remake.
The Eiger Sanction, Clint Eastwood, George Kennedy. Enter the Dragon, Bruce Lee.
Oh, yes.
Fist of Fury with Bruce Lee. The Man Who Would Be King, Michael Caine, Christopher Plummer, Sean Connery.
Not sure.
We spoke about that a while back, didn't we?
We did.
Yeah, it was mentioned a couple of times, yeah.
The Three Musketeers, Oliver Reed, Michael York, Richard Chamberlain, and Raquel Welch.
So good.
Mm. So that's the action adventure movies, because it's a bit hard to categorize some of these, because they'll be classed as comedy drama or comedy thriller, and you think, well, it's more thriller than comedy, but and then there's comedies that come in, and you think, well, yeah, okay, they're comedies. Trying to place them is quite hard. So that was my brief action adventure list. Animated films. The Aristocats.
Yeah.
Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
Oh, I love that show when I was a kid.
Yeah, I think I might have seen it once all the way through.
Angela Lansbury.
And then bits of it. That's right. And David Tomlinson as well. Watership Down.
Oh,
heard of.
I'm still terrified of rabbits just because of that film.
I'm sure they used the rabbit out of the Holy Grail for that.
Yeah, easily. Yeah. He was the nice character.
It's probably the first film I remember crying at.
Bright eyes.
When I saw that back in, I can even remember when I was sat in the cinema when that was on. And that was back in the 70s. Late 70s, it must have been. Yeah, I don't know why we went to see that, but there you go, family film. Into comedies now. My favourite genre. MASH.
Yes.
Now, I was, when I was 12, I had to go into hospital for an operation, and I was there for a few days just before Christmas. And while I was there, I was on bed rest. I couldn't get out of bed, and I was awake through the night, and I couldn't get to sleep. And somebody gave me some sweets as well, I could munch on some sweets. So I was thinking, oh, I've lost my sweets. Where's my sweets? So a nurse was walking past, and I said, oh, excuse me, I can't find my sweets. And she said, they were your sweets. Oh, I think we've got them. And I said, I can't get to sleep at the moment. There was a few other younger kids around. And he said, well, we're watching a film in the other room if you want to come through. And I said, well, I'm on bed rest. I can't. So they physically wheeled this bed, which is like proper hospital cast iron bed, into the next ward where they had the TV on. And they were watching MASH, which I'm not sure is quite the best film to be showing, A, a 13-year-old, and B, to be watching it while you're actually in hospital. Because some of the scenes in the film, there was blood spurting everywhere and all that. So it's quite a thing to see when you're 12 years old. We went in, and there's all my flaming sweets. They'd nicked all my sweets. So they're all helping themselves to it. So that was my memory of MASH, the film. And, of course, you remember as a 12-year-old, you see all the blood. That's one thing. But you see when they pull the curtain down and reveal in the shower, hot lips. That's the biggest thing you remember. I have seen the film probably about 10 or 15 years ago, but I haven't seen it recently.
Yeah. I've seen the film. I don't think I've seen that much of the TV show.
Oh, I've watched the whole TV show at least twice because we just finished doing a rewatch this year. Me and my wife. My wife loves it. She had all the videos. I recorded them off the TV. Then we bought them all, and then we've now got all the DVDs. So it's a big thing in our family. We love it. Carrying on with the list, we have The Big Bus, which could have gone into a disaster movie. But it's actually a comedy, so we'll put it in there.
I remember that. Yes, the non-stop bus.
Yes, that's right. You can't stop it. It's going. It's breaking wind at 90.
Yeah, it's called Speed. So, I saw it in the 90s.
Yeah. Yes, that's the one. Yeah, that's the remake. This is the one that Snips, Dave, very kindly went out and got a copy for me, and nobody else has rented it out since. He says it's the only one he's losing money on. So... I need to buy it off him, I think. Blazing Saddles.
So easily could have been in my list. I really wanted it to be in my list, but yeah. I chose a different film with one of the actors in that film.
Right. I love this film. I think a lot of people love this film anyway. I just love it with the scene with the chessboard where he says, you're the Waco kid. Prove it. And he goes to outdraw him. He says, put your hands either side of the king, and then the guy grabs it, and of course he's got it in his holster. It's just that's just so funny. But also when he's they've got all the black slaves all lined up, and they're all digging the thing, and the bosses come along and start giving him a load of crap, and of course he's comes up, sits there, and he's just like resting on the horse like that, and they're all giving him a load of crap and saying, oh, you're the Waco kid. Well, there's more of us than there is of you, and they all get the guns out, and for the first time ever, I counted them. The seven guns are pointed at him. Seven guns, right? And of course, you hear, draw, and you see him make a move, and then you look at all of the people holding the guns, and all of these guns get shot out the hand. There's six shots, seven guns disappear. He's actually taken two guns out of his belt and fires six shots from two guns and takes out seven. And when you go back to where he is, he's still sat there with his arms crossed. He hasn't moved a muscle. Yet. It's just hilarious. I love that. I just love the way they've done that. And the whole film is so good and anti-racist which for the time, even in the 70s, was a big thing. But of course, that statement in the Wild West, of course, was an even bigger thing. But then it just goes off the rails with a typical Mel Brooks. bit in a film, and then it goes into another film. The producers are being made. It's just, oh man, it's all mayhem.
It's just when the guy playing Hitler is sat at the desk for lunch, and he's saying, "So what happened to you in the movie? Ah, they killed me in the bunker scene." So many quotable lines. One of my favorite ones is when they're both sitting there, and the sheriff asks, "So why aren't you a gunslinger anymore?" And he says, "Well, I just can't hold the gun properly anymore." And he just like raises this hand out. It's really steady. It's like, "Yep, it's solid as a rock. Why aren't you a gunslinger?" And he's like, "No, but I shoot with this hand, and it's really jittery and it's just going over the place." Oh, so funny. So funny.
Like I say, that could have easily been made my top three. In fact, my top three, I thought once I go for the films I went for, and then I thought, no. Let's go for three comedy films, and it was this one, and the next one, which is The Life of Brian. And again, I just love it, so quotable. I don't know what if you guys did this, because obviously Dan, even yourself, for being a lot younger, back in the day in the 70s, and mostly sort of into the 80s, really, we didn't have video recorders quite then. They were around, but we as a family, we didn't have one. And I was given one of these big ghetto blasters for you as a kid, the big 80s, big stereo recorders. And I used to push it in front of the TV, get a cassette, put it in the cassette and play and record. And you would record the audio from the TV. Mm-hmm. And I've done that with a lot of stuff. I've still got the original space shuttle launch, all of the TV that was live on the TV and the landing, all recorded, all the audio from that. You can actually get it on YouTube. You don't have to do it these days, but I've still got it as an MP3, recorded on cassette, recorded it onto DVD, and now it's as an MP3. But I used to do that with Grand Prix. I used to do that with films and all of these films that I'm saying about now, and I can still quote and all that, and especially this one and another one that's on my list a bit down. Mm. I used to go to bed, press play, and fall asleep to the audio. Wake up in the morning and I think, oh, I remember up to that bit. Next day, I'd rewind it and press play again. So I'd listen to the whole thing over and over again. I was playing the Life of Brian holds my favorite joke of all time. And I was playing it to my son before. And I was quoting the word for word. And it's where Brian has been. He's gone back to his home, and his mother's there. Say, "Where have you been? Where have you been?" And next week she hears this noise, and she opens the window, and there's thousands of people all outside the window, and they're all going, "Brian, Brian, Messiah!" Of course, the mother just opens the door, opens the windows, and goes, "Now listen, he's not the Messiah. He's a very naughty boy. Now go away." And then they're all going, no, we want Brian, we want Brian. So eventually Brian comes out, and he's going on, and he's preaching to them, saying, "Look, you don't have to follow me. You don't have to follow anybody." He says, "You're all individuals." "Yes, we're all individuals." He says, no. He says, "You are all different." "Yes, we are all different." "I'm not," right from the front. "I'm not." That's just like, everybody's different. They're all individuals. Yes, we're all individuals. But the guy at the front isn't an individual.
Yet he is.
It was just like, how does that work? And that is just my favorite joke of all time. It's so, it really, it slaps you in the face. You go, what? Hang on. Whoever's written that has nailed it, absolutely nailed it. So
it's when they're sitting in the pit for me, when he's just woken up the guy who's been silent for years, and he stepped on his foot. "You stepped on my foot." Yeah. And then they all catch up with him, and he says, "Look, I am not the Messiah. I am not a Messiah at all." And John Cleese is just emphatically going, "I know you're the Messiah. You are the Messiah. I should know. I've followed a few." And that's just all he says to say. So good. Just so good.
"Follow the shoe. Follow the cord."
The cord.
Yeah, "I was blind. I was blind, and now I can see." Oh, it falls into a hole. It's so many. "Blessed are the cheesemakers." Oh,
too good. Too good.
You call him Big Nose. Just like, so many. What have the Romans ever done for us? Oh, we could go on all day on that film.
Yeah, sorry. Yes.
Oh, that's you a whole British guys in your humor.
We love it. Sorry. It's part and parcel of being British. You only get your citizenship if you can quote Monty Python.
Mm-hmm. I heard that, actually.
Yeah, it's true.
Anyway, moving on. Every Which Way But Loose, Clint Eastwood. Jeffrey Lewis, who I think is an underrated actor, but...
Clint Eastwood made a lot of films in the 70s.
Oh, boy, yeah. Did he make a lot of films, yes. And I've not even got half of them in here. Mm. Sandra Locke as well. And obviously, Sandra Locke and Clint Eastwood married for a while. Mm-hmm. Monty Python and the Holy Grail. So going back to Monty Python again, that came out.
Not, English Kinnegans.
Yes. A lot of people love it. I'm not a huge fan of it. I much prefer Life of Brian. Then we go to The Longest Yard, also known over here as The Mean Machine, with Burt Reynolds. And I love the remake with Adam Sandler, which is almost a direct copy, but does also have Burt Reynolds in it, which is great. Being an American football fan, I love it. It comes under comedy for some reason, but there you go. Dark comedy in places. Silver Streak, Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor. It's a film I managed to get hold of recently. Been looking for it for a while. He keeps getting thrown off a train. And American Graffiti, which I've not seen. Again, George Lucas film with Harrison Ford, Richard Dreyfuss.
Isn't Ron Howard in that? Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Which I didn't know. I knew it was something to do with Harrison Ford because this is where George Lucas obviously picked him for the role of Han Solo. So
I always get that film confused with Porky's. I don't know why. It's just something because like it's that era. It's the same thing. It's completely different movies. They're not related in any shape or form. But because that's a coming of age movie and Porky's is a different coming of age movie, it's something in my brain just conflates the two, and I don't know why.
See, I would have put Porky's with Revenge of the Nerds.
Oh yeah, that too. Yeah. Revenge of the Nerds. I'm going to have to watch that now. That intro is going to be stuck in my head.
Also, horror movies.
Lots of horror.
Yeah. Again, lots of horror, but I can't really name them all. But throw in any that I miss. Carrie. Yes. Sissy Spacek. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Make sure your knives are sharpened. Count Dracula. Christopher Lee.
Mm.
The Deep. I'm putting that in as horror. Robert Shaw. Funny enough. Jacqueline Bisset, Nick Nolte, and Louis Gossett Jr. The Exorcist. I couldn't remember who was in The Exorcist. Who's in The Exorcist?
Anybody the Devil?
Yeah. It was a bit of a head turner, that one.
It was a bit, yeah.
Jaws, of course. Roy Scheider, Richard Dreyfuss, Robert Shaw. Halloween, Jamie Lee Curtis, Donald Pleasence. Probably the best one, I think, out of this lot, The Omen. Gregory Peck and Lee Remick. The Wicker Man, Edward Woodward.
Yeah.
Any others that you guys can think of?
Well, yeah, Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Which I've never seen. Piranha.
Yes.
I Spit on Your Grave.
Well, thank you very much for that insult at the end. But
what about the other things?
Piranha, I remember seeing them. They showed a trailer for it at some point. And I remember seeing the guy in the boat with his piranha just goes and sticks itself to his cheek. I mean, come on. Yeah. But yes, piranha, I suppose, in the same sort of vein as Jaws, really. You know, hit the water, there's a lot of bubbling, and then,
dead
man. Okay. Musicals. Not so many musicals, but big ones all the same. Mm-hmm. Cabaret, Liza Minnelli. Fiddler on the Roof, which is a big one, Top Hall. And Paul Michael Glaser makes an appearance in that.
If I was a rich man,
all night long, if I was a wealthy man. Anyway, Grease. I'm not going to do any Grease songs.
I'm sorry, this might get some really serious feedback, but I cannot stand Grease. It is one movie I absolutely refuse to watch at any point I can.
I don't know how many copies of Grease I have bought for various girlfriends over the years.
Yeah. You poor, poor man.
I know.
I think a lot of it, it's an area I don't like as well. It tends to be like either high school, American high school, or American just after high school. It's not an age that I get, and I don't understand, because not being an American and coming out of high school is a big thing over there.
And they're all played by 30-year-olds.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. It's not even that time. They should have been having their first job and been fired by now.
At least.
So yeah, so go on. So Saturday Night Fever, you've not seen either, then, I would assume.
I have not.
I mean, I've got nothing against that. I don't mind dancing movies or anything about dancing or all that kind of stuff. Just Grease just gets to me. I was just, yeah. It's my bugbear.
It's the word.
Yeah, it is.
On a clear day, you can see forever Barbara Streisand and Yves Montand.
I'll take your word for it.
And yeah, on a clear day, you can see forever. Anyway, Scrooge with Albert Finney.
One of my favourite Scrooges, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. That's all I got for musicals. Any others that pop up to mind?
Yeah, but it's on Dan's list, so I won't mention it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, we'll move on to driving movies. Now, the next one.
Driving movies, that's a genre?
Yeah, well, there was that many different driving movies. I'm going to put it in as a genre.
Huh. Okay.
So, wow. Smokey and the Bandit.
Ah, yes.
A good one. I mean, would you put that as a comedy? I suppose it's a comedy, really, but yeah. it's a sort of driving comedy.
It is.
Just, again, you know what? I can quote that left, right, and center.
I watched it with my son a couple years ago because I was introducing him to classic movies, and we both loved it. I'm not sure I'd seen it. I must have when I was a kid, but I had no recollection. And he absolutely loved it. And he was like 13 back then. So
yeah, it's a cracking film. I was on a Facebook page a while back, and they said, "What quotes do you quote to this day from a movie that you still quote to this day?" So I typed in, "There is no way you could come from my loins. As soon as I'm getting home, I'm going to smack your mama in the mouth." And it was rejected. Violence. We can't put this on our website. I'm sorry.
It's a quote.
But it's a movie quote.
Right.
It's in a comedy show.
Wow.
Inciting violence. Okay, fair enough. We won't put that in. So, yeah, smoking about it. Convoy comes on the driving movies.
Sure, I've seen
it. Place it would fit. Mm-hmm. I've seen it once. The Getaway, Steve McQueen and Ally McGraw. Mm-hmm. Herbie Rides Again.
I think we've seen all those Volkswagen movies.
Yeah, that's right. Duel, which is Steven Spielberg's first film.
Oh,
yeah, the car versus a big truck or something. Yeah,
yeah. You don't see the driver of the truck. It's just a truck, and it follows him.
It's an old beat up truck, right?
It's a big articulated wagon or some description.
Glory.
But yeah, big thing. One of the big
things
you see in America, and anywhere really. Le Mans with Steve McQueen. Now, I don't expect you guys have seen this. It's one of two films that are stunning in the motor racing world.
Hmm.
You're 22 minutes into the film and nobody said a word. It's all about the you can hear the commentator in the background, the cars running around the track, the conversations in the pits, but none of the major actors have said anything for up until 20 minutes. It's also brilliant because Steve McQueen was supposed to have done a film a few years earlier, which turned out to become Grand Prix, which is a cracking film about Grand Prix racing, excuse me. And he was ill and working on a different film at the time, so he missed it. So he made this one instead. And he spent the first year watching, I can't remember what year it was now, but it was one of the early 1970s Le Mans races. Mm. And he basically went around the pits, he was on the track, he was everywhere. And then the next year, the following year, he filmed a lot of the film during that race. When it finished, he then had permission to film extra scenes and drive cars around the track. And what they did is they hired the racing drivers to actually drive the cars and they would film them. At one point, the racing drivers were coming around one of the corners to find him lying down in the middle of the road with a camera, filming them. And hadn't told them he was going to be there. And he's like, what the hell is he doing there? There were scenes where he was driving, and they said, when you get down at the end of the long straight, they were saying to the director came up to the racing drivers and said, when you come down to the end of the long straight, Steve McQueen will overtake you. And they said, right, okay, well, we'll back off, and then he can. And they said, oh no, you don't need to back off. And Steve McQueen's a decent racing driver, he knew how to race. They said, right, okay. So after 20 laps, they said they went back up to the drivers and said, "Okay, can you actually let Steve McQueen past, please?" Because they were deliberately saying, "Well, if he thinks he can get past, fine, get past me then." And they were deliberately braking later and later and later, not allowing him to go past. So, but having said all that, the film is amazing, basically because although he's the big star. And you would think, well, he's going to win the race. He doesn't. He comes second to a younger lad, and he allows the other younger lad to take that win because teammates and the way that, and so he got the essence of Le Mans. It's not necessarily if you win or not, it's finishing the race that is the main thing. And it's just an incredible film, really is. Very, very well done.
That does seem to be a bit of a theme when you think of like the sports movies or anything like that. Like the person who should win, if you're thinking of it being an American movie, isn't the person who wins. When you think of Rocky, when you think of the champion, when you think of the Le Mans, by the sounds of it, you know, it's always the underdog. You know, you think he's going to win and then he still loses. And so it's almost like the country has just come out of losing perhaps a big vital war.
In
the Vietnam region, maybe they're learning something. But yeah, it just seems like that's a big change, like from what we've seen in the 50s and 60s so far, when all the movies we've been discussing over the other two episodes, you know, we always win. It's always the good guys win in the end. But now we're sort of learning those lessons, and that's really, I think, the big change for me in the 70s. So it's clear that there's lots of other movies out there that do the same thing.
Yeah. Absolutely. And the last driving movie I've got here is Vanishing Point with Barry Newman. Bit of a strange film. I think I watched it recently and I can't remember what it's about now, but I remember it watching it early in the 80s.
It vanished so quickly.
It did. I think he has to take a car from A to B, and then he gets to a point where he can't, and then he drives into a big bulldozer and kills himself.
So it's a feel-good movie. Nice.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Drama. There's a few dramas here. The Candidate, Robert Redford. The Railway Children, you know, Jenny Agutter, of course.
Yeah.
Rocky, Sylvester Stallone, obviously.
There you go.
Ryan's Daughter, Robert Mitchum, Sarah Miles, and Sir John Mills, which I believe is a romantic sort of drama. I've not seen it, so I don't know. And Taxi Driver, which threw me slightly because Robert De Niro, obviously, and Jodie Foster is well known for that role. I'd forgotten Sybil Shepherd was in it.
Yeah.
So she must have made an appearance. Last time I saw it was a long time ago, and I don't think I'll be watching it again. But I couldn't remember Sybil Shepherd being in it. How many Bond movies can you name from the 70s?
Moonraker.
Yes.
Live and Let Die? Or is that 80s? Yes.
No, that's 70s.
That's it. That's all I got.
Diamonds Are Forever.
Okay.
The Man with the Golden Gun. And The Spy Who Loves Me. Which is probably one of my favorites. I think probably my favorite, in fact. The Lotus, driving the Lotus into the water. And that's a good one. Yeah. So there you go. Yeah, five Bond movies in 10 years. Now you're waiting 10 years for one Bond movie. Right. quickly into dramas, we've got Deliverance with Burt Reynolds, Warren Beatty, and I didn't realise Ronnie Cox was in it. I've only seen that once, and it was a very disturbing film.
Haven't seen it.
Yeah. Never want to go into the Deep South, ever, because of that film.
Squeal like a pig. So, The Great Gatsby, Robert Redford, Mia Farrow, I believe is a
good film. Never seen it.
Nope.
Never read the book, never seen the film.
Nope, read the book.
Wasn't it remade recently?
Yeah, I think with DiCaprio, maybe. I'm not sure. I didn't see it either.
It sounds like one of his films, yeah. Love Story, Ally McGraw and Ryan O'Neill, which again, I believe is a big film.
Yeah, we had to watch that in RE for some reason at school. They put on Love Story. It's all about the ethics of relationships, and they were bringing it in just when we got to that critical age at school of like, you know, how do you treat your other partners and how should you react and all this sort of thing. So they would show us clips of Love Story. I'm not entirely sure they should have got away with that, but there we go.
Yes. We've got three Pink Panther films as well. There's obviously all the follow-ons from the Pink Panther films from 1960s. Return of the Pink Panther, Pink Panther Strikes Again, and Revenge of the Pink Panther with Diane Cannon, which all of them are really good.
Is Revenge the one where Peter Sellers isn't in it, but he's all sort of, you know, they film him in the shadows and things, or is that the other
one? No, he was in that one with Diane Cannon because he has a scene. I remember a scene with him where that's the scene where she's saying, you're Inspector Clouseau of the Lure. And then they pair up and just crack up. You're Minky. So We've got three westerns that I will mention. There Was a Crooked Man with Kirk Douglas and Henry Fonda. Two Mules for Sister Sarah, Clint Eastwood, Shirley MacLaine. And High Plains Drifter, of course, Clint Eastwood again with Jeffrey Lewis again. So we do have two other films by Michael Crichton. One is The Andromeda Strain. Yep, that's it. And the other is Coma with Genevieve Bujold.
Oh, she was almost Catherine Janeway. Hmm?
Correct. Mm. There you go. She was Captain Janeway, in fact.
Yes.
Yeah. And then she wasn't.
And then she wasn't. Yeah. That's right. But you can see her hands in the pilot episode. So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. It's quite a bold move to sort of step aside and say, this is not what I want to do. So.
And you forgot the last picture show. You never mentioned that at all.
Never heard of it.
Oh, okay. Well, it's
that's probably why I had to mention it.
1971 coming of age drama film with Jeff Bridges and Cloris Leachman and Sybil Shepherd. It's black and white. It's famous. I've seen half of it and it was boring as heck, but it's famous.
Okay, fair enough. And I think that wraps it up, really. I think we've gone through most of the notable films for the 1970s. Join us in episode 35 of the Cosmic Pizza Podcast and we will reveal our favourite top three films from the 1970s. Our special is gone, the grease in the box is cold, and we hope you are full to the brim. So join us for more slices of life in the next special delivery of the Cosmic Pizza Podcast. Been your deliverers today. Please leave a tip at the door by subscribing for future deliveries, rate and review our service, and we hope you come back for more helpings next time. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, and TikTok by searching for the Cosmic Pizza Podcast. If you'd like to send us an MP3 file, you can email us on cosmicpizzapodcast@hotmail.com. And we'll catch you on the next episode of the Cosmic Pizza Podcast.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.